Returning to our program on this segment is Sean Minton. Welcome back, Sean.
Yeah, thanks for finally having me back, Doug. Really. You get a little notoriety in the paper, I don't hear from you again. Thanks.
Now, Sean, of course, is, as we like to say, and you know I'm going to say this, our answer to Frank DeFord here on Radio Parallax.
Younger and better looking. I don't grease my hair back either. I don't have that little Hitler mustache. Anyway, go ahead, Doug. Sorry.
Sean, of course, has been on the show a couple times and had some very interesting segments on sports, so we're happy to have him back. We're going to discuss, I think, several pertinent topics, and you're, of course, eminently qualified, having been a sportscaster in the Pacific Northwest for many years.
That qualifies me to talk about just about anything, doesn't it?
I believe, judging by sports shows, yes. The sports topic that was on my mind that I think you find interesting as well is this subject of Title IX, which I did not know much about until recently. I heard about this when a friend of mine called me to say that her son, who's quite a prospective, I guess, gymnast, has a dim opportunities to receive a college scholarship because so many colleges have cut back on the smaller sports programs.
You really kind of have to go back in history. Title IX has gained a lot of attention since it's been associated with the NCAA and collegiate sports. But what a lot of people don't realize is when it was originally created back in 1972 by Richard Nixon, coincidentally, 8 days later, they had the little break-in at the hotel and his life was pretty much ruined at that point. Uh-huh. But when it was created, it was more for, it was more of a civil rights act, more of that's when all the women's rights things were going on. It was really kind of designed to make sure that proportionally, if a public university or a public school is going to be publicly funded, that scholarships and things like that have to be divided equally among men and women.
Actually, what I'm gathering is that when they enacted the law in 1972, the Civil Rights Act, it was designed to combat discrimination in education.
Exactly.
But sports weren't even mentioned in the document, and rules for athletics didn't come out till like 1979.
Yeah, eventually the women's groups got involved, the NCAA got involved, and it depends on really how you look at it. I mean, I know this is going to really throw you for a loop. I'm strongly opposed to Title IX. Uh-huh. When you look at the, you know, now that we've kind of, let's step aside from the civil rights aspect of it, and let's really kind of focus on the part that's gaining the most attention right now, and that's the association it has with the NCAA and collegiate sports, high school sports to some extent, and even junior high sports to some extent, which basically now the rulings say that scholarships have to be proportional to the student body. In uh-huh. essence, if you have more women in general at a university, then their scholarships should be proportional. So let's take the University of Michigan, for example. If 54% of the general student body is women, then 54% of the scholarships in sports should be going to women. Now, that's obviously not the case, but every year it gets closer and closer to kind of getting in check and getting in line, which frustrates people who truly love sports and uh-huh. love collegiate sports, because a lot of people look at it as a quota system.
Well, it would be hard to argue that it wasn't, I would say. I guess the point here was to get women more involved in sports as well. Well, I guess that wasn't really one of the directions of it, but that's been one of the consequences.
Well, that's just it was an opportunity for certain women's groups to take a law that had been set back in 1972 and kind of twist it and turn it and crank it and do what they wanted to do to it in order to try to set things up. You know, it was really a lot of foresight. I mean, I give them credit for having some foresight way back in 1972 when they got involved with this. But in essence, what it's done is, as in the case of your friend who potentially may not have a scholarship, is when you look at the percentage of women who like sports and the percentage of men who like sports, the percentage that are, say, involved in intramural sports in college and the percentage of men and women, you can see that it's going to sound horrible, but
Women are probably less interested in sports.
They are less interested in sports.
I don't think
they're
going on a limb to say that.
And when you look at the amount of revenue generated in collegiate sports these days, the multi-billion dollar contracts, it's not there because the networks are interested in promoting women's lacrosse. They want to see football, they want to see basketball, occasionally hockey, things of that nature. But it's the men's sports that bring in the bulk of the revenue. So why shouldn't men's athletics be able to bring in more of the athletes?
Well, it's a question a lot of people are asking. Apparently, the Bush administration's holding public forums around the country to discuss the effects of Title IX. The Bush administration being, of course, foremost concerned about civil rights.
Thank God, because George has quite a record in Texas. I'm sure that everybody's pulling for him. And that's a bunch of PR garbage. But there is the thought that he may, when Clinton was in office, he really stuck by Title IX, and, uh-huh. and whether he believed it or not, he made sure that those laws that were enacted stayed in place. With Bush, he has a tendency sometimes to take these laws that have been in place for quite some time and twist them and turn them and kind of put them in the direction that he wants them to go. So it'll be interesting to see if things stay status quo or if maybe we start seeing a little bit more of a shift where it doesn't have to necessarily be proportional to what the general population is at a university.
Now, I gather I guess you would know this, that it really is true that the big colleges or most colleges feel that football is something they should support. And mm-hmm. so the football still gets funded and that basketball still gets quite a following. Mm-hmm. But that these other sports, according to the way my friend put it was, sports that small guys can do are really taking it in the shorts because they are just their funding is being cut at the expense of more funds that naturally, you have the same size pie. How you're going to slice it is going to be, and at the expense apparently of what had been other men's sports.
Well, look at men's sports not only as, you know, they receive a certain amount of funding from the university, but they are also creating millions of dollars in revenue for the university. The men's programs, in essence, are paying for all those other programs that your friend is talking about. It's paying for wrestling. It's paying for tennis. It's paying for gymnastics. It's paying for all those things. Without the revenue brought in and the money that's divvied up once the NCAA gets all the revenues from the big networks, there wouldn't be anything left for anybody. There's no way that the schools on their own at this point, at the level that collegiate sports are at, could afford to pay for the hundreds of scholarships that they have to pay for every year. So it's a revenue. If the men are generating the revenue, and there are a few exceptions, and I can name two. There are maybe two or three exceptions in all of college sports where a women's team may actually bring in more revenue than the men's team. One of them is the University of Tennessee women's basketball team, which uh-huh. Which has just been dominating for years and years.
They're like the perennial champs.
Pat Summitt they've had four or five national championships. Maybe North Carolina soccer, which again is just a huge revenue producing sport. But then you've got North Carolina men's basketball, which is huge. And Duke basketball on the women's side is also very profitable. But if someone were to come up to me and say, name 10 women's programs that generate more revenue, if any revenue, other than the men's side, I couldn't name them. I have no idea whatsoever.
I gather this trickles down into high school as well, judging by the article I've read that according to this, in 1972, 1 in 27 high school girls played a sport. Last year, the ratio was up to 1 to 2.5. So it apparently has had quite a tremendously beneficial effect to getting women involved in sports.
Well, maybe it hasn't. You know, maybe I mean we've kind of seen a whole. A shift in women's attitudes towards sports. Now, if it was, maybe it's Title IX, maybe it's dad just wants to push his daughter into getting a tennis scholarship. I don't know. But, the women's rights groups are going to say, yes, look at Title IX. Look how those numbers have, you know, the ratios have changed a little bit. It's a rousing success. But when you look at the people that oppose it, they'll say it's a quota system. And they'll say that, you know, if you look at the overall numbers strung out since 1972, they've changed. But the changes haven't been as massive as the numbers would lead them to believe.
Well, Sean, if it's undeniably had a good effect on women participating in sports, it appears to have really hit men hard in things like tennis and wrestling, and I guess the case of my friend gymnastics. And you have some stats that you brought along on that?
Well, you can put those all under the big title, non-revenue producing sports. And like we talked about in the last segment, these are the sports that are only around because revenue producing sports, mm-hmm. like men's basketball, men's football, are there to kind of hold them up. Because, I remember I went to a Pac-10 school, and I never went to a wrestling, I never went and saw a tennis match, I never went and saw gymnastics. And that's not to say those things aren't important, but, you know, they spend a decent chunk of change for scholarships, for travel, for food, for coaches, right. But they're not producing any revenue. I used to go to Washington State women's basketball games. I could count the people that were there and, you know, hands and toes, and that was about it. But they're paying for coaches, they're paying for assistant coaches. There's at least seven or eight scholarships going out to those gals. So the money's got to come from somewhere. Some of it's coming from within the university, but a lot of it is because the men's basketball team and the men's football team was profitable, so they were able to make up the difference in those sports. Otherwise, there would be nothing. When you look at how it's affected, you know, mostly the men's side of sports, the statistics over the last 20 years show that there have been over 400 men's collegiate programs that have been dropped directly as a result of Title IX.
In all sports?
In all sports. That includes the wrestling, that includes tennis, that includes... It's pretty interesting. Next year, the University of Miami is going to drop their men's swimming and diving program. And most people say, well, who cares? They've got a great football team. They're always competitive in basketball. Well, that's where Greg Louganis came from.
Right.
Can you imagine life without Greg Louganis? I mean, had he not had the opportunity to attend the University of Miami on a swimming scholarship, he may never have achieved what he achieved. And then you think, how many other people now are not going to get the chance to go to the Olympics, to become a professional in some form of athletic endeavor, simply because the school they're going to or want to go to no longer offers that program? I mean, Eric Heiden, where would he have gone? God, I think about that every single night. It's sad.
We've been trying to get Dr. Heiden to come on the show to rebut some of your remarks last time. But
I was telling Paul, maybe he and I could Indian leg wrestle. So that might be...
Man has a leg like a tree trunk.
I know. That'd probably be the one thing he could take me at. But other than that, I don't fear the man. But I mean, honestly, I mean, when you think about who produces the revenues, where the money comes from, and who benefits... It's hard to say who benefits the most, but think of all, 400 men's programs.
No, I'm with you. I just think,
Which means that 400... What the reason they're doing that is to bring in 400 women's programs. Some schools have a tough time getting enough women to fill all the scholarships. Not the big-time schools, but when you're looking at Division II and independent leagues, I mean, sometimes they're going to go out and they're just going to grab someone and give them a scholarship just because they've got the scholarship available. Use or lose it, basically.
Well, it's a shame because I think swim meets can be very compelling. Wrestling can be fun to watch. And, sports like water polo are going to be out in left field.
I don't miss all those little weenie sports all that much. I just think that I think the quota system is the part that drives me. I mean, if you've got 8 competitive men's programs, like say at a Michigan or a UCLA where they're constantly competitive, now you're going to take one of those programs away simply because collegiate athletics, the law, actually says you have to have this proportional to the student body. Well, who does that really benefiting? Who does that benefit? That doesn't really benefit. Obviously, it doesn't benefit the men's programs. The school's going to start losing revenues because people won't be able to show up for those. And now you've got to start from scratch with, lacrosse or soccer or fast pitch softball or whatever it is. It's going to take years and years for anybody to even follow a new program like softball. They probably won't even know it's around for 5 years. And they may never be competitive.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly now out there being discussed. We're doing our part. The Bush administration is holding public forums. I guess people should go out and express themselves and see if we can't find a way to...
I'm sure people are just going to line up for that one.
Well, John Ashcroft, I'm sure, will be spearheading the effort to set things right. Well, Sean, as long as I got you here, let me ask you your opinion about the matter of UCD. Apparently, the student body has voted to make the jump up from Division II up to Division I. On this program, I took rather a cynical view on the wisdom of doing that. I just didn't see that it would be a big plus. Although I must say, after I voiced my opinion, I saw in UC Davis magazine their article on this consideration of taking the big step. The UCD plays much smaller Division II schools and regularly beats up on them. And it said, shouldn't it be a good thing for all if they were playing schools of a comparable size? And I have to admit, I was swayed by that argument.
Well, I've seen it happen. When I was up in Portland, Portland State University was a Division II school, and they decided, the circumstances are exactly the same, and they decided to make the move to Division I. There was a conference that includes a lot of Northwest schools called the Big Sky Conference, which I'm sure some of the listeners are familiar with, and they decided to make the move. Now, in order to do that, though, the NCAA requires a lot of a school. It's not, you don't just fill out a form and say, okay, we're going to move up.
Right.
It requires money. It's going to require them to offer more scholarships. We're talking about Title IX. It's going to mean that they're going to have to probably bring on more women's programs in order to meet the qualifications for moving up a notch. And for people that enjoyed the fact that they could knock around a few schools, it means they're going to get their asses kicked a lot.
I don't think that was the point of collegiate athletics.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I mean, I know it is. Having seen, one reason I was so dubious about the advantage of Division One was having attended like USC football games and just seeing the general behavior of the crowd and the student body and the alumni and how they behave toward, you know, having a winning team at all costs. You know, to hell with athletics. I mean, I'm not sure these guys can read or write, you know, but we want to have a winning football team. I just thought that was just not something that, you know, UCD needed a piece of.
Well, it just depends. You know, a lot of this, you can't get into the administrator's head. When the president of a university sits down with the athletic directors and the powers that be, and they decide to make a decision like this, it's obvious we can't read their minds, but the long-term gain is going to be revenue for the school. If you can, for one thing, I'm sure you already know this, Doug, but when, say, Washington State plays USC on a given Saturday, you have to realize that Washington State is also getting a percentage of that gate. So if they fill up the Coliseum, if 100,000 people show up for that game, USC is getting a cut of the gate, Washington State is getting a cut of the gate, and the NCAA is getting a cut of the gate. So from a revenue standpoint, it's going to potentially, maybe not right away, but potentially it's going to bring in more money for the school revenue-wise.
Well, I'd like to see him put 100,000 people in Toomey Field at UCD. That'd be an interesting thing to see.
But if you can get, if UC Davis gets invited to play a couple of the larger schools, I'm not saying that, you know, let's go out and play the University of Miami or something like that. Right. But if they can get invited to play some of these schools that would like, let's face it, a pushover on their schedule, they're going to get, you know,
they're scheduling Davis.
They're going to get crushed, but they're also going to, you know, as long as half the guys on the team don't get killed, they're going to come back with a little more money as well. So and eventually, if they turn the program into a winner, they're going to bring in more revenue locally as well.
Oh my! Well, I guess it's pretty much going to be a done deal. The student body seems to be in favor of it, and they're going to proceed along these lines. And at some point in a couple of years from now, we're going to see UCD joining other schools in Division One.
Well, I can tell you real quick before we break, it has been a miserable failure at Portland State. They're the doormat of the Big Sky, so keep that in mind, UC Davis.
Well, it's going to happen, so we'll have to watch it unfold, and hopefully there won't be too many bumps and bruises along that rocky road.
I hope that my Cougars decide to schedule them. They could use the victory.
Well, Sean, it's been fun.
It's been fun for you too, Doug.
Thanks again. This is KDVS 90.3 FM.